Hey, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. My name is Eric. Thanks for taking a minute to check us out. If you're downloading the show for the first time, it's me and my very interesting colorful friends talking about eclectic DIY. And today is a special guest is the executive producer of Garden Fork Radio, Jimmy Gutz. Hello, sir.
Hey, how are you doing? Live from North Carolina.
Live from a closet in North Carolina.
This is my new studio. I need to get a little table in here because apparently it's the only room I have that's suitable for podcasting.
You'd be surprised how many NPR recordings are done in a coat closet.
Really?
Yeah, there is a companion website to NPR called, not Trello. I'll try and drop it in later, but it's all about how to record NPR like quality audio. And they openly talk about how they, if they're on the road or they're in their apartment and having to record something, they go into the coat closet.
Podcasting hacks.
And then there's a woman named Ellie who has a really great podcast called Ologies, very successful. And she interviews experts, about different, like archaeology or hurricaneology, weatherology, you know, that kind of thing. And she records the show in a coat closet as well. So you're not alone in the closet.
Yes, I'm in the closet. That's a fact. So is it maybe the next podcast she's going to do will be all about isms?
Yeah. So you and I go a long way back. For people that are new to the show, I met Jimmy. He was one of the original people who watched and discovered Garden Fork before it was on YouTube. My first videos I put up only on iTunes as iTunes video podcast. That's how old I am. And we became fast friends. And ever since we're together.
And the reason I found you is I got the very first when the iPod got video on it.
Yes.
I got it a day before anyone else that I knew of, because it was supposed to come out like on a Thursday. And Thursday I was leaving to go to Las Vegas. And I really wanted to have this iPod for the plane, and it showed up a day early. So I started downloading anything on iTunes that was video that was free. And I was watching, I was watching Garden Fork on the plane going to Las Vegas. And everyone, what is that? And I said, this is the new iPod that has video on it. And I really did feel like the king of the county. Yeah, and I'm still friends with some other people that do podcasts. Tim and Michelle Dressen, they're in Minneapolis, and they do a podcast called 500 by Midnight. And it's all about Las Vegas. It's like the original Las Vegas podcast. And they're on shows in the thousands now.
Wow, I've only been to the Las Vegas airport on a layover.
That's kind of like me in Los Angeles. I've been to that airport. I've been to the airport in Dallas, Texas, but never seen any more of those cities. Las Vegas, I would recommend it. I would recommend you go. You got to go twice because the first time you're going to screw everything up.
I would like to go to Las Vegas and rent a car and leave Las Vegas. Because I kind of like to see the other side of towns, not the part that's been made up to look nice. I like the part where people actually live, you know?
Yeah, get downtown on the outskirts. Yeah, that's like when we go on vacation, we went to Cancun and we got on a city bus, me, my wife, and my son. And we said, we want to go to Market 2023. And they said, oh, yeah, Market 27. I said, no, 23. Which is the locals market, and 27 is the big tourist market. So we went to Market 23, and the guy said, you sure? Yeah. And we went and kept going, and we got to this place, and it was so amazing. We were the only white people there, literally, and the best food, the best treatment, better prices, everything about it. You got to see the culture, and we just walked around there all day.
Yeah, I am the gringo that lives in the Latino and Chinese neighborhood. So it's similar to that, where on my corner is a lady with her food cart that makes empanadas.
Empanadas. I remember you talking about her. She's still there.
Yeah, and then there's two women on the next corners that have tamales, you know. So I love it, and they're hardworking people. I give them credit. So we've been messaging back and forth about what to talk about, and I think you run two successful businesses. You run hollowbooks.com, where you make custom hollow books for people, and you also have some stock hollow books. And then you also have a pool cleaning business.
Yeah, that's my newest venture, and this year, this past summer, it more than doubled, and I'm starting to get afraid of it.
And you're a soul, you're a one man band at this point.
That's it. I had my son work with me last summer until he left for college, and then after he was gone, I went from going to 11, 12, 13 pools a week to going to 27, 28. And it was, they're spread out, and it's just a lot of work for one person. So by that point, I was so spoiled by having my son with me that I brought on my next door neighbor to just help me out. He doesn't get paid or anything if the IRS is listening, but yeah, I think next year I'm gonna have to go through all of the growing pains of hiring someone officially and registering the business as an LLC, getting insurance, learning how to do quarterly taxes, get all the little papers that you have to have hanging in your place of business that tell people about all their rights as an employee, and it's quite daunting.
I actually, I don't know if everyone knows this, but for quite a while, I was a licensed New York City contractor, and it's quite an endeavor to follow all the rules. And what I eventually discovered was that most of the allegedly licensed contractors in New York City didn't follow the rules. So,
So you were doing things the hard way.
and the expensive way. My best advice to you is to find an accountant, ideally a CPA, who works with small businesses and can kind of handhold you through the whole process of starting your LLC, any tax ID numbers you need, setting up the quarterly taxes, and most importantly, the payroll taxes and deductions and the sales taxes, if they do have sales tax in your state.
Yes.
I tried to
Workman's
set up the
comp.
LLC myself and I screwed it up, and New York State has these arcane rules about it, and I messed it up. And a buddy of mine started a company. He's a video producer, and he found this account and said it was like one-stop shopping, set it all up, and I'm like, why didn't I do that, you know? So,
The Custom Hollow Book Company is actually an LLC.
oh, okay.
I always, had in the back of my mind that dream that somebody was gonna take one of my hollowed out books and go Timothy McVeigh with it or something like that and track it back to me and try to. So I spent $700-$800 on a lawyer to actually write up a paragraph, a legalese paragraph that goes out with every book that says, "Hey, this is a piece of art and is not intended for safe storage of anything, blah blah blah." And but the LLC, I didn't have much problem setting that up, but they make it pretty simple here in North Carolina.
Yeah, it gives you protection, especially if you are a homeowner. I think it's really important. The other thing I learned was my accountant set me up with a payroll company that did the payroll. You could email in or call in, or they have a website about the number of hours people worked and what their hourly wage was or their weekly salary. And it really helped me because I've seen where people have messed up their payroll, and there's a penalty. If you miss a sales tax payment or a payroll tax payment, you get a fine. And I made one mistake with the sales tax, and it was a $500 fine. And I was like, holy cow.
Wow, they are punitive there. Well, let me tell you a story about North Carolina. It blew my mind yesterday. I got a phone call, and it came from Raleigh, which is our state capital. And it was a lady with the sales tax collection office saying that I didn't file my sales tax collection report for the last quarter that ended whenever, back in September. And
Right.
she said, I said, I can't believe that you guys are actually calling me. This is great. And she said, well, do you have any to report? I can just put it in right now. I said, no, I don't. And honestly, I think it was a real mistake to even set up and have to worry about this four times a year, because I sell these books on the internet, and I think in 5 years, I've probably sold three books in this state. And it's always like, really, wow, look at that. I sold one in Cary, North Carolina. That's crazy. I said, if you guys really want me to send you the $7 or $8 that I would owe you over the last 5 years, I said, just let me know. She said, well, would you like me to cancel it? And I said, can you do that? She says, if I just hit this button. I said, cancel it. And it's done. Didn't have to go through any rigmarole. It was very refreshing.
Wow, that's a little different than New York State, I'll tell you that. When I closed down my business, I called the state and I was like, how do I close down an LLC? And the answer wasn't right in front of them, you know?
Yeah, they got you in. They want to stay in.
Yeah.
Let me ask this: if you didn't have any sales tax to report for a quarter, and then you go through that quarter and you don't tell them you have zero to report, are they still going to find you 500, or are they
Yes.
charging, fining you? They will, even if you
Yes.
don't owe
It's
anything.
failure to file, yeah. And if you have no sales, it's still $50 a quarter. So,
Ooh.
yeah. But
Well,
anyway,
you guys.
I mean, the bigger thing is find someone that does this every day and go with them. And
Yeah, I
it does
believe
cost
that's
money, but
the.
it'll save you in the end.
Yeah, it could save you from $500 fine, or just save you from pulling out your hair trying to keep track of this when there's pools that need repaired and cleaned.
My biggest challenge was finding the right people to hire because we were doing, very not very interior repairs and renovation and, a lot of painting, wall work, plaster, fixing plaster. And I had one person, everyone was freelance, it was on a job basis and hourly paid. And I had one person who was fantastic and would show up, but their skill set wasn't as good as I would want. And yet the two people I had that were had a fantastic skill set could not show up at 8 a.m.
Oh,
And some days they
yeah.
just wouldn't show up. And I'm like, wait a minute.
It's when you're the type of person that I assume you and I are, you would never imagine doing something like that. But there is a certain subset of people that run their entire lives that way.
Yes, I know them. Yeah, they no longer work for
So
me.
yeah, finding somebody to do plaster, that's got to be very hard to find.
Yeah, and once you find them, they're golden, and the problem is they know it. So
Ooh, yeah, a lot of the brownstones and things, those are all plaster, and once they're plaster, they have to stay plaster, or is there some remediation you can do and replace that, or you have to gut the wall?
it depends on what they want to do. I mean, the interiors are not landmark. The exteriors of a lot of the buildings are landmark, but the interiors are not. But I actually have a video about plaster repair where I slip in drywall. And some people are less than happy that I do that. But it depends on what the client wants. If the client wants to pay for a replastering, it's a lot of work. It's three coats at least. There's a base coat, a scratch coat, and skim coating. Whereas if you just slide in a piece of drywall and then you mud on top of that, and then you take a primer coat of paint, the sheetrock primer, and you make the roller really kind of dry and tacky and roll it a bunch of ways, you can make it look like plaster. And that's what I used to do. But it was a challenge. And then I finally realized that I was doing so much managing and doing all the paperwork and everything, which I'm horrible at. I could make almost as much money if I just worked by myself. And so I scaled back the company and I became a one-man band again, and I was much happier.
Well, I was very happy this year. I kept super busy. I had some, late nights when it was still daylight at 9 o'clock. I was still working, and the pool business starts to taper off as the sun goes away. So it's kind of a natural progression as the business winds down. But if I was to have, say, 200 pools, then you've got to go big. And everybody wants their pools cleaned on Thursdays and Fridays. Nobody wants you to come clean it every Monday after the weekend. They want it ready for the weekend. So it's kind of really a concentrated week.
Wow, I never would have thought of that.
No, nobody wants you to come on Monday unless something fell in their pool. There's a dead rabbit in my pool. Can you come get it out? Yes. Yeah, saw a lot of dead things in pools this year.
That could probably be its own Instagram account, you know?
Yeah, yes, it could.
An unfortunate one.
I've seen a lot of beautiful things in pools, like leaves, oak leaves that had been in a pool so long that they were translucent.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, and you just saw the ribbing, and then you take it out and it dries and it curls up and it's gone. It's like a beautiful fleeting moment in time.
An ephemeral oak leaf.
Yes, don't try to get me to cry again.
So, as far as pool cleaning, is there some little tricks of the trade you can let us in on?
Yeah, there are a lot of people when I go, like the people that have had pools for 20 years that I went to this year, and I go around and they say that their skimmer just doesn't work very good. It never really did, and they're missing the weir, which most people might call the flapper. When you're in the pool looking into the hole in the wall where the skimmer is,
Yes.
there's a little door that goes up and down, and it's attached at the bottom. And it floats upwards, and it usually has some type of foam in the top, so it wants to stay up, but the suction of the water pulling inwards pulls it down ever so slightly, so that just the top layer of water on your pool is being, quote unquote, skimmed. If that is missing, it's pulling in a giant block of water, including 90% of the water that's under the surface. So you just want the surface skimmed. That's where all the leaves and debris and bugs are. So I put a flapper into this guy's pool, and he called me up the next week and apologized to me. He said, "I haven't had one for 20 years, and I don't think I need one now." I said, "Well, I'll tell you what, I've got one. It's half broke. I'm going to put a piece of tape on it, and I'm going to stick it in here. And you call me in a week and let me know if it's still in there." And he said, "I can't believe for 20 years I've been fighting this pool."
That feels
And
great, doesn't it?
oh gosh, you have no idea. And you're talking about a piece that was $10,
Yes.
and I just shoved it into place and it snapped in. That's it. No installation, no hassles. He said there was never one in there. I said, "Well, I guarantee there was, and at some point it's got gone." Yeah.
Wow,
And
yeah.
the other trick, if you want your skimmer to work better, if you have a main drain in the bottom of the pool, and whether you have one skimmer or two or three or 10, you can turn the main drain off at the bottom so that it's only pulling from the skimmer. That way, when you have heavy leaf dropping time, the skimmer is going to pull harder. You have to go out every day, sometimes twice a day, and clean them, but you'll never have leaves sinking to the bottom of your pool. You have leaves on the bottom of the pool because your skimmer got full and the leaves got wet and they finally sunk. You can avoid that by, jacking up the,
The
you know,
intake of the
turning.
skimmer, yeah.
Yeah. And the same way works opposite. If you have like a bunch of dead algae or small debris on the bottom of the pool, you turn the skimmers off and then slowly brush everything down to the bottom of the pool where the main drain is and let it go into your filter.
Wow.
You can use it. It's almost like a whole house vacuum system where you just brush everything underneath the cabinet and hit a button and suck it in.
Yeah.
You just take a couple of days, brush real slow, and just let everything settle. brush everything towards the deep end, let it settle, come back in an hour, do it again, and then just kick everything towards and it'll drag everything
Well, I wish I could do that with Labrador hair, you know?
in. Yeah, you just need like a grated floor.
With a
Like those old
constant
fashioned
negative
floor.
pressure, you know?
Like those old flat old fashioned floor vents, you know, that are like 4 feet by 3 feet that will sit in the floor, and that's your air return.
Yeah.
My grand or my wife's parents just bought a house that actually has one of those, a very old house, and they have a Chihuahua. And I told them, I said, you know, you could just brush all this dog hair over to that thing and then go down there and change out the filter. Because it's getting in the filter anyway.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, well, maybe we do need to check that. But finding people to come work on pools is crazy because if it was like a Ford Mustang, you can train somebody to work on a Ford Mustang and they can work on every Ford Mustang. But almost every pool is different, unless you go to one that the same builder made. I have a few pools that are around the corner from each other, and they're very similar. They're saltwater pools. They have, the valves are all operational. Everything's just sort of the same. But then you go to another pool, something's been fixed, something's been changed, just old, has a different skimmer. There's just everyone is so different that I'm fearful of sending anyone out without me. So my thought is just having people go out and vacuum. I just bought another electric vacuum that I should do a video on all the little repairs I'm going to have to do to it. But you pop this big cart right off the back of the truck. It attaches to the receiver,
The
and then you
trailer hitch
roll.
receiver, yeah.
That's it. And it lays down and it rolls, has the battery, 40-foot cord. It's like an old-fashioned vacuum cleaner, but instead of it has a bag on it too, and it just snaps over the top, and it's like trolling motor inside of it that just sucks everything up into this bag. That's idiot proof. You can send people out, vacuum all these pools. I'll come around. I'll adjust the chemistry. I'll backwash. All the things that someone can screw up pretty easy.
Right.
And then I'll just, instead of driving my truck, get myself a little, gas zipper or something, and just bounce around from all the pools and hit each one of them as part of my route. And check on people and follow up behind them. But you need somebody, and you need to replace me, and that's the person that I've got to find.
Yeah, I found that very hard myself because I grew up in the film and photography business, and it is commercial photography and commercial film, and so it was all about the client, you know, ad agencies and the brand, and we would roll out the red carpet for them, you know, because they're paying us a lot of money to do whatever, you know. And I was a photo assistant and a production assistant, and I just kind of took that same kind of customer service to the contracting business, and people were always surprised when I showed up on time. And like I would put down tarps and I would run down, it's called RAM board or that rosin paper, you know, on their apartment floors. And I would clean up when I would leave, you know, and I would say, hey, I saw this thing and I just fixed it for you, you know. And so I was constantly busy just because I showed up and I could hold a conversation with them. So.
Then then that's where the word of mouth business you get from that is the best. That's the best new business you can get, because if you've got good customers, they won't send you to bad customers.
Yes. Well, every once in a while, I'll tell one story. Someone emailed me and said, I want this closet organizer installed. And I'm like, okay, you know, this is my rate. I'll come over. And the brownstone, the row house had one of these wrought iron gates on the front door, which have a deadbolt on them. And so this person let me in. And then they closed the iron gate behind me, and it had a key lock on the inside. It didn't have a regular you know, the inside of a deadbolt, you just has a knob that you unlock to let yourself out, right? It had a cylinder lock, and I'm like, oh, that's a fire hazard. You know, I didn't say anything. And they led me into their apartment, and there's this box that's of the closet kit, and it's been taken apart. Everything's all over the floor. And they're like, well, I want this on the wall. And I'm like, but you said you wanted it in the closet. Yeah, but I changed my mind. And I tried to do it myself and I cut some of the pieces up. And I'm like, oh, you know. And it's this knockoff closet kit that is made in a foreign country. And the instructions were photocopied 10 million times and you couldn't read them. And I realized that I was in a nightmare. I'm like, this is just.
And you're locked in.
Yes. And the client was a little wound pretty tight, you know, and it was a cold call. I did not get this as a referral. And I'm like, I just have to get out of here. So,
I need to go to my truck for a minute.
and I just said, this kit looks defective to me. Some of these pieces are broken. I can't read these instructions. I would suggest you return this kit and get the right one. Oh, yeah. And I said, and I'll go to my next customer and then we'll talk from there, you know. And so she let me out. And I'm like, okay, I won't get back into that house. I was just like,
Was this gate similar to the one where you were welding on the street?
Yeah, they're iron gates. And they're, you know, there was back in the day in New York City was a lot of crime and people would break down doors, so people put iron gates on the front of their doors. And they're no longer necessary. Crime, this is an incredibly safe city, but some people still like to be locked in. I don't.
The tops of them are the kind that make you not want to try to jump over them too, aren't they?
Yeah, they have little spikes on the top. Yeah. Hey, real quick here. I was wondering if you wanted to join the Garden Fork email list. It's Maura Eric. I don't know if you want that or not. But the best way to do that, if you go to the gardenfork.tv site, there are signups all over the place. There should be one on every page. Also, in the show notes for this show, if you're listening to it in the iTunes app or one of the other podcast app, to click on the little, I think you click on the little text thumbnail of the show and the notes will pop up and there's a link in there. Or just go to gardenfork.tv and there should be a sign up there. All right. Thank you. So you want to shift gears? We are, that was very interesting all about that pool stuff, by the way. But we are also both gardeners.
Indeed. I still haven't went down and we haven't had a hard, we've had some, freezy-ish nights, and I'm sure that I've got a few frozen ruined potatoes, but I have an entire bed that's about 3 by 3 and maybe a foot and a half deep that is just loaded with potatoes that I have yet to go down and harvest, and also peanuts that I have yet to harvest.
How cool is that? Tell me about growing peanuts.
Well, I'm going back down to visit my father in Florida Friday. When I went down last winter, no, I was down there in the spring, and they were harvest. I was getting some peanuts on the roads at a roadside stand, fruit market, and they had peanuts that still had dirt on them, and they looked wet. And I said, "Well, what are these?" And they said, "Oh, we just pulled those out of the ground this morning." I said,
Wow.
"Well, that's really cool." So I got a bag of them and I brought them home and I didn't do any research and
How
I
garden
went the
fork of
garden.
you?
I definitely went garden fork method on that. And I brought them home, let them sit for a week or two just to kind of dry a bit, I thought. And then I went and planted them and I only planted maybe, I don't know, 40 or 50 of them. And they did really well. They didn't want to grow down very deep, so I saved some of those, and then I planted them again this spring. So the peanuts that I have are going on 2 years old.
All right, so you grew like starter peanuts and then you replanted them as like a crop then.
Yeah, you save peanuts just like you're saving a tomato seed. And I had peanuts. We baked them, we boiled them. I even put some in a pan with oil and sauteed them, and every way that I had them was delicious. They sometimes they're chewy. Sometimes you get them to where they're, I don't know about you, but I'll buy a bag of peanuts, and when I get one that's really dark, I get real excited, and I love that. So I made a whole bunch of those.
That is cool. That is so great. It's always enjoyable to talk to you because you've done something that I would never think of, and I would never think of peanuts.
They grow super simple, super easy, and they rhizome, I guess would be the way to say it. The best way I could explain the plant is almost like it grows underground, like Bermuda grass grows underground. And every once in a while it deposits a peanut, similar to potatoes, I guess. And super simple, don't have a lot of requirements for maintenance at all. And then as soon as it gets cold and the tops die, you dig them up. Or you do what I do and leave them down there for 2 months.
Hey, if anyone else is growing peanuts, would love to hear from you. Radio at gardenfork.tv. Maybe we get you on the show. But so, did you have to let the peanuts, after the 2 months of ignoring them, did you have to let them cure, or did you eat them kind of like right out of the ground, moist and raw, or?
I did it all. I ate some moist and raw and I didn't like it. I boiled some and added some spices to that, and I'm not a big fan of boiled peanuts. I'd had them once before, but anytime I grow something like tobacco, I want to try it for everything that it can be used for. I'd say my favorite way was to I soaked some in salt water with some hot pepper and then put them in the oven, and I ruined a batch because I had it on I had the heat on too high, so I put it on lower and let it go. This year I'm going to try to make some in my dehydrator
Oh, brilliant.
because it's a forced air dehydrator that I make all sorts of stuff in. It's pretty much going to cook them, at a nice even temperature, and they're on the racks where they get good airflow all around them. And it's not like beef jerky. You could just take the whole dehydrator and sort of shake it side to side and roll them around. I'll let you know how that works out. That's my plan. It's just because it sounds like the easiest way.
I like easy.
Speaking of easy, there's nothing easier than getting biscuit mix out of a box.
Yes.
I sent you some biscuit mix that we discovered in West Virginia on our trips back home. My mother said that she's in South Carolina. She lived in West Virginia on and off several times. She said, if you can find some Taze Valley biscuit mix, bring me some. So that's the name of a valley just outside of Charleston, West Virginia. And I don't know what was special about it, but it looks like Bisquick, but with little pieces of like what I assume were like dry lard that's all inside of it. And I made them myself, and I'm not a biscuit maker, I'm not a bread maker, but I was so just taken by them. We went back up the next time. I bought 15 boxes. I mean, a box was like $2.37 at, and we found them at Walmart, but not in the northern half of the state. We had to get like an hour and a half south of where we grew up, and we found it at a Walmart there. I just cleared the whole place out, and you should have seen. There was a lady behind me. I think she was hoping to get one, but I just ran them all off of the shelf right into my cart like that. And they have gravy mix too, and we brought that back, but haven't tried it yet. I was wondering if you liked it, so I sent you a box, and I've been waiting on the next video,
Yeah, I've
testing
been
it, but
radio silence from Eric.
maybe YouTube's had enough biscuit videos. I don't know if they get a lot of views.
No, I actually have had it in my the cupboard up at the little weekend house, and I pulled it out the other day because I have a friend who's a chef, and he comes over and cooks at my house. So, it's a little intimidating, and I'm like, "Oh, I could make this biscuit mix." But the instructions say that you have to have a really large baking pan to make them. And I'm like, I can't make that many biscuits. That's too many biscuits for the amount of people here. And so I threw them back in the cupboard. And then I realized the next day I could have just used half the bag.
Yeah, well, you made a mistake that I rarely make, and you read the instructions. I will read the ingredients, what to put in it, but I won't pay any attention to what they want. I just sit there and watch them, And some people like to make their biscuits in a pan to where they're all stuffed together,
Yes.
like a pie, and then you pull them apart, and then they have soft, gooey sides. Me, I want my entire biscuit to be crusty all the way around, top and especially the bottom, so that you can hold it in your hand and just, saw it in half and load the thing up with cheese and bacon and everything that's delicious.
All right, so now I have to make them. And you also sent me the white lily flour, which is the only flour to use for making Southern style biscuits. So I could do a compare and contrast.
You.
Oh, I'm sorry, you dropped out there.
Oh, okay. I am back. I didn't move.
So that's ex okay. Now I'm excited. Now I'm like, okay, now I got to go do this. So I'm done with making snowblower videos for a while. So I can,
That's so depressing. It's depressing to see that you are living with snow right now already.
yep. And I'm actually
It's
in New
not
York.
it.
I'm in New York City today and it's snowing out right now. So
Is that the first snow in the city?
now we had a little bit before with the big dumper. That was up at the little house. We also had some snow down here, but up there was, 12 to 16 inches, so it was perfect to make the snowblower video.
I love the little the button that you can point where the snow goes. I would have so much fun with that.
That's the joystick control for the snow chute. Yeah.
Yeah,
I sound
you
like
could
a toy
pile up.
belt sales rep.
Well, you kind of are, but I think they make good stuff.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. So, I think people are probably at their destination. We've had quite a conversation. We've gone from setting up a small business to talking about biscuit mix, which is typical Garden Fork. I love it.
Yes, it's never hard to talk with you, my friend. Hey, how is Rick?
He's great. In the most recent podcast, he mentioned he was studying about homemade airplanes, and I'm worried he's going to go make his own airplane.
Wow. Yeah, he probably will.
He'll probably
And he'll
take
find
the battery out of his Prius and make an electric airplane, you know?
and knowing him, he'll find a way to grow tomatoes while he's in the sky. Closer to the sun, he said, that's where they need to be. All right, Eric, it was great chatting with you.
Thank you again, my friend.
All right, we'll talk again soon.
Garden Fork Radio's executive producer is Jimmy Gutz. You can find more information about Jimmy and the custom hollow books he makes at hollowbooks.com. Our theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com. Other music used in the show is used under license from audioblocks.com.